Kane, Bridget, and Grant opened up with their weapons, squeezing off shot after shot. Miniature water spouts spumed in front of the canoes. Over the staccato drumming of the subguns and the cracks of Bridget's auto pistol, they couldn't hear Season's voice lifted in frantic commands, but they could see him gesturing madly. The warriors began a desperate backwater maneuver, paddling against the current to slow their forward momentum. Bullets gouged sprays of splinters from the rims of the canoes and punched holes through the hulls. The man slapped at his left shoulder and fell overboard, submerging completely in the river. As ripples spread, the water bubbled furiously. The man rose to the surface, his arms flailing wildly. Silver-scaled, flat-bodied fish glistened on his face, hands, and neck. They clung to his flesh by double rows of serrated, razor-keen teeth. He clawed wildly at the piranha fastened to his face, trying to pry them away. As he shrieked, one of the carnivorous fish leaped from the water and sank its teeth into his tongue. The warrior rolled over and over, struggling for his life, a red stain spreading across the surface of the river around him like a cloud.
That ought to discourage the bastards.
Perhaps. Or attract something far worse than a school of piranha.
Eastjell gazed worriedly over her shoulder. Crawler glowered in her direction.
Which would be what?
Before she could answer him, the river between the boats swirled with sudden movement, wavelets forming and cresting. The Tulishinian warriors, terror on every face, ferociously dug their paddles into the waters of the Xingu, attempting to turn their canoes around and row against the current. Despite the heat, the back of Kane's neck flushed cold as a great sheet of water flew upward, crowned with foam. The body of the man beset by piranha abruptly vanished, snatched beneath the surface. A heartbeat later, he reappeared, clutched at the hips between a pair of giant, fang-filled jaws. The creature only vaguely resembled the caiman they had glimpsed earlier. Dimly seen amid the churning waves created by its gargantuan body, the crocodile looked to measure at least 40 feet from narrow snout to the tip of its lashing tail. Its jaws were gigantic, nearly 6 feet long, with thick masses of scale-coated muscle swelling at the sides of its triangular head. Its armor-plated hide was of a repellent brown-black hue. The creature lifted the bloody, writhing warrior high above the surface of the river. His legs kicked in a futile spasm as its jaws closed, the huge fangs shearing through flesh, crunching through bones. The upper half of the man's body splashed down into the Xingu. The lower half slid down the crocodile's gullet, swallowed in two snapping gulps. A few warriors hurled spears at the monstrous barrel-shaped body. All but one bounced off. The sharp point penetrated the scales shallowly and then fell away when the reptile turned its attention to the canoes. Sindri stared at this for a split second before turning his attention back to the steering oar.
I think we've rested for long enough.
Eastjell and Crawler followed his example, resuming their paddling with renewed vigor and determination. Gripped by a horrid fascination, Kane kept his eyes on the crocodile and the two canoes. The creature dove under one of them and came up beneath it, pushing with its armored back. The craft tipped but did not capsize. The men in it hung on desperately to the sides. Then the travelers dug out, rounded a small overgrown promontory, and Kane could see no more of the struggle.